I'm going to introduce you to someone who is known as Uri Greenberg, Uri Tzvi Greenberg. Uri Tzvi Greenberg was born in a small town in Galicia, to a Hasidic family. He was raised in Lemberg. He had many poems. Even before he was 20 years old, already he was a poet. He fights in the First World War, does Uri Tzvi Greenberg. He fights in the First World War. And after returning to Lemberg, he's witness to pogroms that he sees in November of 1918. Him and his family escape, and they move to Warsaw, where he writes for a Yiddish newspaper there. And eventually, when the war breaks out in 1939, he manages to escape. He believed, he was involved in Israel as a member of the Knesset. He won a number of awards from literature. But one of his major theses in a lot of his writing is that the Holocaust was an almost inevitable outcome of Jews being indifferent to their destiny, whether or not you take that approach or not. But he was a well-known poet who won the Bialik Prize for literature 3 different times, awarded the Israeli Prize for his contribution to literature. In 1976, the Knesset held a special occasion because he was turning 80. So Uri Tzvi Greenberg is a well-known writer, and he shares the following. He shares something about a poem. When I came across this a few years ago, I had to track it down. It wasn't easy to track down, but in the world of the internet, you can track down a lot of things. And here he shares with us a poem from Rabbi Yitzhak Levi of Berdichev. Now, Rabbi Yitzhak Levi of Berdichev did not necessarily write this. Rabbi Yitzhak Levi of Berdichev lived in the 1740 to 1809, but he was known as the defender of the Jewish people. So in one of his poems, Uri Greenberg writes as if Rabbi Levi Yitzhak of Berdichev is talking to God, is standing at a crossroads. And he's standing there, says Rabbi Levi Yitzhak of Berdichev, and he's also he's sad. He has no answer to all of his sadness. And the story goes, as he writes on the left side here, hold on a second, wait for the phone to stop ringing. The left side here, it says, Lo lo ribono shel olam hineni ma'ein shechein ha'ala yelech mahalech. And he says, I'm at a loss. Right? There's no Jews. Jews are in worship, keeping Shabbos. There's no Jews left. What do we do? And it's Rabbi Levi Yitzhak of Berdichev, the great Berdichever, who's asking these questions, demanding a reply of the Ribono Shel Olam. And he says, Ani Levi Yitzhak Berdichev doresh tshuvas ra'am. I'm demanding an answer. God, why are you not answering me? What's the answer to all this tsaris that the Jews are having? It says, Anna, answer. Daber b'nei sov v'yedu ani lev yitzhak Berdichev doresh tshuvos ram. Answer my question. And this is whether or not he actually writes this poem, doesn't write this poem. This is a major source of our Jewish faith. Now, we did a share a number of years ago on bad things happening to good people, which is not what we're going to talk about. We are talking about a unique aspect of Tisha B'Av that allows us to do something that we don't usually do. We don't usually talk like Rabbi Levi Yitzhak of Berdichev here in this poem. We don't usually stand there demanding God, an answer from God. And the reason is, and it makes sense. It makes sense that we're not able to demand an answer of God. Why is that? Well, the Gemara says here in source number one, the Gemara says, In the Mishnah in Brachos, tell you something interesting about this Mishnah. My first job as a rabbi was the rabbinic intern of congregation AABJND in West Orange, New Jersey. So I was the rabbinic intern, and as any rabbinic intern, I had to do things that the rabbi didn't want to do. So Rabbi Eliezer Zwickler is a tremendous rabbi, one of my great mentors. So Rabbi Zwickler asked me if I would cover one Mincha Maariv during the week. So I drove from YU to West Orange to do Mincha Maariv for 15 people, then drive all the way back to Queens. But I was the intern, so of course I was going to have to say yes. And I had to learn between Mincha Maariv. Now, that was my biggest fear. My biggest fear as a rabbi was that I was going to get a question during Mincha Maariv, and I wasn't going to know the answer. I was so nervous. So Mincha, let's say, was 4:30. I got there at like 3:30 to prepare, like an hour worth of preparing for the 3 minutes of learning between Mincha Maariv. And this was one of the first Mishnayos that I learned. So the Mishnah tells us in Brachos, Chayiv Adam Levarech Al Hara'a, Kashem Shemivarech Al HaTova. The same way that when good things happen, the Mishnah is written the other way. We're obligated to bless on the bad, just like we bless on the good. So there, we know that when something bad happens, and unfortunately in our community, not just in the world, but in our own community, and unfortunately, I think Tisha B'Av, we're well into the mind frame of Tisha B'Av this year. Already too early to be in the mind frame of Tisha B'Av, but we are. But we know that we make a bracha on bad the same way we make it on good. We make the bracha of Dayan HaEmes. God is just. And in fact, the Medrash in the Sifri talks about the death of Rechinina ben Trajon. Rechinina ben Trajon is the decree he's going to be burned in the Torah scroll, one of the Asar Harugi Malchus. And when it's happening, he says that Hatzor Tamim Paolo, that the God who is known as the Rock, his deeds are complete. Right? And this is, they said, how great are these people that even during the times of such horror, they're proclaiming that God is great and God is just. And usually when we get to bad things, it doesn't mean we think it's great, but we understand that we don't know everything. And we say, Atzur Tamim Paolo. Right, that God, and that's why we make a bracha of Dayan HaEmes. Something terrible happens, there's a loss, we tear Kriya. It's Dayan HaEmes. It's not simcha, it's not happiness, but it's an acceptance that we just don't know. And that is the general approach we have to bad things. When things happen we don't understand, when tragedy happens, we say Dayan HaEmes. Right? The God of truth. And I'll just share a little bit here before we move into how Tisha B'Av is different. I want to share with you from Rav Kleina Mizkalm and Shapira. Rav Kleina Mizkalm and Shapira was the Eish Kodesh. So the Eish Kodesh, we know, who dies in the Holocaust, but who wrote down a number of his drushos, of his sermons, of his lectures, of his learning, even though he lost at the beginning of the war about five people within a span of a month in his family. In the Yiddish paper, 1939, wrote an article about this great Hasidic Rebbe that even with such loss, he's still teaching Torah. And one of the things that he shares, if you want to really study this topic, there's a book. It's called Wrestling with God. Wrestling with God is about 600 pages, but it's not. I don't read 600 page books. I would probably get through page 4, but it's a collection of authors, rabbanim, philosophers, their approaches before, during the Shoah, post the Shoah, philosophical religious issues. So in this book, they quote Rav Kleina Mizkalm and Shapira. And remember that he's speaking to Jews that are literally in the darkness. They're living through the horror of the Shoah. And here, Rav Kleina Mizkalm and Shapira takes this approach of Dayan HaEmes, and he takes it really to the next level. And he explains the following. He says that faith is not simply confidence substituting certainty. Faith is the light and holiness of God inside the Jew. The inner light resonates to the holiness of God's brilliance and is tied to it. It's intrinsic to the Jews. So he says that Amuna is not just that I could be certain or I'm not sure. So faith just fills up those little gaps. Amuna is God himself. It's God himself living inside. So he continues over here and he says the following. He says, we'll skip a little bit. I'll make this a little bit bigger for those that want to see. He says, because worship depends on faith, a Jew's faith must be wholehearted. For it is only total selfless faith that enables Israel to give its life for God. If faith is flawed and only half-hearted, how can it empower anyone to self-sacrifice? total selfless faith means continuing belief in him even during times of Hester Panim. Right, to our meaning, and this is a fascinating study. In fact, Rabbi Lam writes about this in one of his essays, and many throughout history, including Arachayim HaKadosh in the 1400s and the 1500s, they wrote that Jews, the average Jew, so to speak, the guy who wasn't so committed, who maybe didn't, wasn't so religious, yet gave his life for God. There's something about that connection, that deepness. That's what it means to have emunah. So he continues, and he says in the next page, he says here, what room is there, God forbid, for doubts or questions? Admittedly, Jews endure suffering of the sort with which we are currently afflicted only every few hundred years. Still, how can we expect or hope to understand these God's actions and then allow our faith to be damaged, God forbid? If one blade of grass created by God is beyond our understanding, how much more unfathomable is the soul? And if we don't understand the soul, how much less an angel? How much less the mind of God? And it's this lesson that the Esh Kodesh is simply, in a certain simple level, sharing. It's way above us. It is so way above us that we just don't understand. And because we don't understand, that in some ways actually gives us comfort. Because we can't understand really how grass grows. We could understand science, but there are certain things that we know we can't understand. So the more that we realize we don't understand means that there is just certain things, and if we don't understand that, of course we don't understand how God runs the world. And if we begin now, we could be confused and have certain questions in a sense, but not that are taking away from our emunah. And then in the horrors of the Shoah is how the Esh Kodesh is lifting up his followers. They're looking towards him. And in fact, he quotes the Gemara about Rabbi Akiva. The Rabbi Akiva is dying. His students say, really, Rabbi Akiva? Ad Khan, this far? It's a strange question. This far? He's Rabbi Akiva. And he says, they're not asking him like, really, Rabbi Akiva, you're this great? I mean, come on. They're really saying to him, give us some of that emunah. We're struggling with it. How are you so okay? And he provides his answer that he waited his whole life to fulfill the mitzvah, and he gives over that, meaning even that level of emunah, it's not attainable for most of us. But when there is an understanding that we can't fathom God, we can barely fathom ourselves, let alone our neshamas, let alone God, that realize, oh, we don't know everything. And there is, you know, there is a simplicity that doesn't mean that it's simple, but there is a simplicity to that in many ways is comforting. When we do in school, names not numbers. So we run an emunah session for them, for the eighth graders, about faith and the Holocaust. And while there's obviously a range of opinions, and we should never in any way question how somebody reacted with their emunah, whether to grow stronger or not, to grow stronger, to grow weaker, to even to leave. But one of the things that we share as I discuss with my students is that there are a number of responses that either use their emunah to grow stronger, which is religious resistance. Right? When we bring the eighth graders to the Holocaust Museum and Laurie Haston asks them, what does it mean to resist? So most of them say to fight, but sometimes to light a menorah, to shake a lulav, eat an asuka. But so that's some survivors. And some survivors said, the fact that I'm here means there has to be a God. How else am I here? And we have written testimony of Jews like that. Because I don't understand. I don't understand why things happen, the good or the bad. So because I don't understand, that strengthens my emunah. So then in general, this is how we approach sad things, right? We approach sad things by saying Baruch Dayan Emes. It's what we call Tziduk Hadin. And in fact, Kinos on Tisha B'Av have a number of underpinnings of Tziduk Hadin. I don't understand. L'cha Hashem Atzdaka. God is just. God is right. And we on our simple, very little levels, just can't understand, you know. Take, for example, the stock market. You could try to explain it to me 1,000 different times. I still have no idea about these things. It doesn't make a difference how many books I read. You know, thank God John Blumberg's helped me a little bit understand these things. I really don't understand them. There are certain things we just, so I believe certain people understand it, and that's why it's still running and working, I think, fine. I have no idea. Okay, so certain things we don't understand. But Tisha B'Av shifts our entire thought process on this. Meaning, if this was non-Tisha B'Av shir, this will be the focus. Siduk Hadin, what does that mean? Our emunah stays intact. But Tisha B'Av is different. When we get to the kinos on Tisha B'Av, something happens that is very odd. We begin to question. For example, in the kino on Tisha B'Av morning, which is this kino Zion, the second kino we say in the morning, Rabbi Elazar HaKalir says, Eicha atzta v'apecha. God, how could you do this? La'abed biyad adomim emunecha. How could you do this? V'lo zacharta brisbein ha'ah. You didn't remember the treaty. And in fact, each one of these lines in this kina is saying, God, how could you do such a thing? Did you not remember the deal that we had? And you go through the kina, but every line, how could you abandon us? How could you do this? How you didn't remember that we were dedicated to you? You didn't remember about our Sinai. You didn't remember the deals we had. Zechor Hashem mehayolanu. And if you take this kina and you contrast it to Dayan HaMS, what in the world are we doing? Who in the world said we could do such a thing? We could talk like that. We could go ahead and tell God. Eicha zonachta bizamecha. How could you abandon your Beis HaMikdash in your rage to leave it over to strangers, to Zarim, to non-Kohanim, to abandon it, to defile it, to make it gross? And you didn't remember that Har Sinai, we had a wedding, we had a chuppah. Who in the world are we? Who gave us that chutzpah that we could talk like this? And in fact, if you contrast it to everything we just said, which is its own shir, how could we die on MS, Tzidok Hadin, everything is just, Hatzor Tamim Pa'alo, Rabbi Akiva, Rechidina Ben Tragion, and all of a sudden we have this language that seems like very rough and very raw and almost inappropriate. So how is that allowed? So Rabbi Soloveitchik says, you're right. You're not really allowed to talk like that. However, the Rabbi Soloveitchik says the following. Rabbi Soloveitchik, your quote in the, if you want to, one of the most amazing, is not enough of the right word, but the way to enhance your Tisha B'Av is to buy Dr. Jacob J. Schachter's The Lord is Righteous in All His Ways, which is much of the thought of the Rav on Tisha B'Av. And his summary in certain ways, and quoting from the Rav of many years, the Rav would sit on Tisha B'Av 9 to 5, the entire day, sitting and talking about tragedies, Jewish history. So says the Rabbi Soloveitchik, kino, second paragraph here. Kinos are different from, first we'll start in the beginning. Kinos are different from piyutim. He says, second paragraph, by contrast, kinos are made up of questions and complaints. Eicha means how or why. How is it possible? How could you have done it? Why did you do it? I don't understand. But this raises a serious question. What right do we have to say kinos? To ask and to complain? Normally the rule is we're not allowed to ask questions. On any other day, if God forbid, disaster strikes, the law is that a Jew cannot ask eicha. The very question of Eicha is intolerable. Who am I to ask a Kaddish Baruch Hu to explain? What do you mean how or why? Who are you to understand? What allows you to be so bold? What right do we have? And that's how we in general would approach tragedy. On the right side, when a tragedy strikes, a Jew says to the Kaddin, he acknowledges the justness of the decree of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Hatzor Tamim Pa'alo. We don't have to explain God. Right? We don't have to try and make sense of what God has done. The Mishnah says one has to praise God even in times of distress. So the question is, if the rest of the year, when we're dealt with tragedy, we are told, and the truth is that even the survivors that we meet that have their questions, I mentioned from these names and numbers, but they have rebuilt their families and they have grown and they are sitting there with eighth graders. This is, we're moving on. Hatzor, we don't understand it. Hatzor, tamim pa'alo, but I'm going to grow. Any other day of the year, tragedy strikes, we look it in the eye and we move. And we don't ask these questions. Tisha B'Av? Tisha B'Av, we're asking all these questions. Why is today different? So the Rav says, why are we allowed to do something today, which means Tishra, that is prohibited every other day of the year? Our right to ask on Tishra B'Av comes from a precedent sent by Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Yirmiyahu HaNavi in Eicha does this. And because he does it, we're allowed to do it. Because Yirmiyahu HaNavi does it, we're allowed to do it. So the question is, what good comes from this approach? If for some reason on Tisha B'Av, as we mourn for the loss of the Beis HaMikdash, Chazal wanted us to be involved. Not Chazal, the prophets. Yirmiyahu HaNavi himself is asking, Eicha Yashva, God, how could you lay Yerushalayim empty, desolate, abandoned, defiled? How could you? So if Yirmiyahu HaNavi does it, we could do it. So the question is why? What goal do we have by taking one day out of the year to ask these sort of questions? So I'll share with you two approaches. One approach comes from a fascinating Gemara. The Gemara talks about Eliezer Zeira, but in short, the Gemara tells a story. And in this story in the Gemara, what we have, it's an interesting story, what we have in this Gemara is that Eliezer Zeira is wearing black shoes, and he's standing in the marketplace in Nehardah. And in those days, Jews wore white shoes and not black shoes. So members of the Reish Galusa, who are really like the head of the exile, say, why are you wearing those shoes? So he says, I'm grieving for the Beis HaMikdash. So they say to him, you're grieving. Who are you? You think you're so important. Who are you to grieve? And they ask him some Torah question to make sure he's knowledgeable and he proves he's right. So what exactly, like, why does he have to prove? Why can't he mourn? He said he puts on mourning clothing. So the great Rav Shiva of Karen B'Yavne, Rav Goldach, explained that mourning is more than just a statement of I'm sad. Mourning is I'm sad, but I want back what I've lost. Now, unfortunately, in personal mourning, we can't do that. But in mourning for the Beis HaMikdash, so maybe that I could do. So the Rashiva explained that they're asking him, who you think you're so important? What are you doing to bring it back? What are you doing? Don't just be sad. What are you doing to bring it back? And in fact, if we look at the story in the Torah, if you look at the story in the Torah about Avraham, right before God goes to Avraham with Sodom, which is the first time that we'll see later from Elie Wiesel that somebody questions God, right before those psukim, God says to Avraham, I'm choosing Avraham because la'asos tzedakah u'mishpat. Avraham does the right thing. He does good, he's just, he's righteous, he's doing the right thing. And then God goes and speaks to, about Sodom. Only when we realize that there's a way to bring the Beis HaMikdash back, that mourning doesn't just mean that I'm mourning, but I'm going to do something to bring it back. And that's why I'll share with you an amazing, amazing piece. This piece comes from Avraham Yeshua Heschel. Avraham Yeshua Heschel was also quoted in his book Wrestling with God. It's amazing. But he was known as the After Rav. He got his degree from the University of Berlin in 1933. Comes to America in 1939. This is the one who was involved in civil rights. But he writes the following. I'll just share with you one line. This paragraph here. The direct effect of his hiding in the second paragraph is the hardening of his conscience. He says here, our task is to open our souls to him, let him enter our deeds. We have been taught the grammar of contact with God. We've been taught by the Baal Shem Tov that his remoteness is an illusion. And he says you have to differentiate between a hidden God and a hiding God. A hidden God is because he's hidden. A hiding God is because he went into hiding. As the hiding of man is known to God and seen through, so is God's hiding seen through. In sensing that fact of his hiding, we have disclosed him. Life is a hiding place for God. We are never far from him. And he quotes the great story. The grandchild of Rabbi Baruch was playing hide and go seek with another boy. He hid himself, stayed in his hiding place for a long time, assuming that his friend would look for him. Finally, he went over and saw that his friend was gone, apparently having not looked at all. And he goes on to explain, right, that sometimes we're crying, but no one is looking for us. So what we have here, and this is very important in terms of our understanding about mourning, that this idea of crying, he's explaining, the most pressing question we usually say is, where is God? How could God have let this happen? But he says there's a flaw to that. The flaw to that rests on that we're blaming God for, in truth, what our own sins and failures. And here we're talking about national mourning, right? A hiding God, because he forsakes his people only after we have turned away from him. So therefore, we've caused this situation. We've caused the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. We've caused everything to happen. So therefore, God is saying, I've gone into hiding. Okay. And I'll just share one more piece to this. And that comes from, hold on, let's share it back here, Elie Wiesel. Elie Wiesel quoted in Professor Berkowitz's Faith After the Holocaust. The reasoning with God is the need of faith. It issues from the very heart of faith. When in Elie Wiesel's night at the hanging of the little boy, someone asked, where is God now? It is the right question to be asked. Not to ask it would have been blasphemy. Faith cannot pass by such horror in silence. Faith, because it is trust in God, demands justice of God. And yet our faith for God is involved in everything under the sun. And what he points out here is one of the most important pieces in our emunah. Why is it that when it comes to Tisha B'Av, all of a sudden we begin to ask questions that we never ask the rest of the year? The rest of the year, we don't seem to ask, how could you? Why is this happening? But one day out of the year we do, and it's important because that day, Tisha B'Av, really helps us understand something about our faith in God. Faith in God, of course, means that we believe there are certain things we just don't understand. And that is always going to be the case, no matter if it's individual, no matter if it's national or communal. Whenever there are tragedies, and unfortunately our community has been dealt with a number of them, and I vividly remember sitting with a group of kids a number of years ago after a tragedy, and I sat with them, a number of high schoolers, and they were asking Eicha questions. And to me, these are questions that are very loud in my head right now. And it's this conversation I remember sitting with them around the dining room table, them asking me, Why is this happening? How could God let this happen? And I know this might not be the most uplifting shiur, but I think for me, this is something that I think we're all processing right now. And I remember sharing with them that I didn't have the answer. But I remember sharing that if we think that we're going to go through life and ever get to a point where we say, that's it. Now I understand. We're going to be searching forever. Part of emunah does mean, number one, that I just don't understand. It doesn't make it easier, doesn't make it harder. It just means that I don't understand. Even Rabbi Akiva's students, the greatest of the greats, don't understand. They need him to bring them up and to raise them to that level. Certain things we just don't understand. Number two is that it's okay to live with questions. We don't live with emunah, we don't live in a religion that has all the answers, because if we didn't have the answer, we'd say, I'm done. I'm finding somewhere else. Right? People come to our religion because they realize that we live with a certain gap between what we can know and what we can't know. But that doesn't mean that our emuna is any less because I have questions. It is strengthened because of my questions. That's Elie Wiesel's point. That's Professor Berkowitz's point. Because I know that I could come to God with those questions, because I know that I could ask them, at the same time that I'm asking them, I know Hatzur Tamim Pa'alo. They don't counteract each other. They're not mutually exclusive. They can live in my head at the same time. I can have the same emuna and the same questions. Because Elie Wiesel is saying, Avraham, Hashem is going to destroy Sodom. And what does God do? God says, I'm going to bring Avraham into the conversation. What? Just destroy Sodom. Wipe it out. They're terrible, immoral people. Wipe them out. But God says, Avraham. No, I'm going to bring Avraham into the conversation. Why does he bring Avraham into the conversation? And what does Avraham do? He demands justice. God, ha'av tetzpet tzadikim rasha. Avraham questions God. To show, and Avraham, we did a shiur 2 weeks ago. He was the greatest of emuna. He introduced emuna into the world. He brought it into the world. He showed us what it means to have faith in God. And he's the same Avraham that questions, that asks, and at the same time, accepts. When God says, I'm sorry, you only got 10, you only got 9, you don't have 10, Avraham says, what can I do? Doesn't mean Avram's emunah is any less. Doesn't mean Avram didn't have blind faith. It means we live in a religion of question. Rabbi Sacks, from this piece of Elie Wiesel, says that we live in, that's the religion we live in. What an amazing religion. That we have an opening for questions. Doesn't mean that our questions should lead us to leave our religion. The fact that I can ask a question means that I have faith in God. Because if I didn't have faith in God, then to whom am I asking this question? And to no one. If I didn't have faith, why would I ask this question? I don't have faith. And that's Professor Berkowitz's point. He says, it is the faith of Avram in God that cannot tolerate injustice on the part of God. And that's Eov's dilemma. It's the power of faith that lends force to the accusation. And that's what Avram does at the same time. It doesn't mean that it's any less. And I share with you here, just because I think as we move forward a little bit, for example, first of all, you have Anne Frank. We'll go a little bit out of order, but Anne Frank writes in her diary, who has made us Jews different from all other people? Who has allowed us to suffer so terribly up until now? It is God who has made us as we are, but it will be God too who will raise us up again. Who knows? It might even be our religion from which the world and all peoples learn good. And for that reason and only that reason do we suffer. We can never become just Netherlanders or just English or representatives of any country for that matter. We will always remain Jews. And I think as a takeaway, what I think I'm taking away, Our community at large, of course, has been dealt with terrible tragedies of the last few months. And, there isn't a getting in the mindset of Tisha B'Av as there has been in other years. Sometimes we're hoping, oh, God, get me through the 3 weeks. Hope nothing happens. Every day we're like waiting to see what tragedy is going to strike. And unfortunately, within our own community, tragedy has struck, unfortunately, and terribly. And we are faced with many questions. We're living in a Tisha B'Av. But at the same time, our response is to ask questions, and Tisha B'Av allows that. It allows our openness to certain things. It allows us to feel sometimes that we have questions. It gives us a little bit of comfort knowing that we can pose those questions, that it doesn't take away from our emuna. But at the same time, it also should motivate us to move forward. So Elie Wiesel tells a story about his meeting with a Lubavitcher Rebbe. Now, there's a number of stories that are told about this meeting. It's a fascinating discussion about Levi Zell and the Rebbe, who had a very, very close relationship. And he says here, as he states in his memoirs, I've never renounced my faith in God. I have risen against his justice, protested his silence, and sometimes his absence. But my anger rises within faith and not outside. I admit, and this is hardly an original position, it's a part of the Jewish tradition, Avraham, Moshe, Yirmiyahu, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, it's permissible for man to accuse God, provided it be done in the same of faith. You know the famous story that they took God to a Din Torah, to a judgment, and at the end, after the verdict, they said, all right, no, it's time to daven Maariv. Right? Like, all right, even though we just had this big court case against God, we got to daven. So at the end of his long soul-searching session with the Rebbe, Wiesel comes to confess, or rather to discover, why he came to see the Rebbe. You asked me what I expect of you, and I said nothing. I was mistaken. Make me able to cry. And in his original Yiddish version, the Elie Wiesel says that he can't cry anymore. His tears are used up. So he says to the Rebbe, Rebbe, make me cry. And the Rebbe's response here at the bottom. So the Rebbe put his arms around the broken man and allowed him to experience his long-awaited catharsis. Did he come forth with his famous paternal love, allow Wiesel to weep on his shoulder and mourn for his father lost in Buchenwald? Again, the Rebbe responded in an unexpected manner. Yes, he did encourage Wiesel to find the needed catharsis for his grief, but not in weeping, because weeping is not adequate form of catharsis for the colossal suffering of Auschwitz and Buchenwald. The Rebbe shook his head. That's not enough. I shall teach you how to sing. Grown people don't cry. Beggars don't cry. Crying is for children. Are you still a child and is your life a child's dream? No, crying is no use. You must sing. Now, of course, Elie Wiesel is quoting this not to mean that the Rebbe didn't mean that you can't cry and be sad. But the Rebbe's response to Wiesel is that it's not just about being sad. It's like the Eliezer Ze'ira with the black shoes. Mourning is going to lead you to do something more impactful and more powerful. That your ability to be part of a religion that allows you to question is what motivated Elie Wiesel to be this great defender of the Jewish people. And it's what motivates us, even at times of tragedy, to want to motivate ourselves to do something, to push forward. That somehow during moments of sadness, we find ourselves with this reservoir of strength and of perseverance and of wanting to do seemingly, new goals and new aspirations to push in the face of darkness, to push for some light. And that's really what questioning does. Questioning of God is not something we should do all the time. We're not on a level to question. And in fact, we don't. We do an amazing job of Hatzur Tamim Pa'alo, of God is just. We don't understand it. I wish I knew. I wish I had the answers. But we understand that God has a plan. I don't know it, and I wish I did. But we don't understand it. And at some point, maybe we will. But at the same time, tragedy is what motivates us. When we look into it, as we'll talk hopefully over Tisha B'Av, hopefully we don't have a Tisha B'Av, to look and to move forward. And as we're all struggling with these feelings, I think it's important to know that they're normal. It is normal that we are sitting and asking, how could this happen? We are sitting and asking, why could this happen? And whether that is the last few months, personal tragedies, we are justified. And that's why I wanted to speak about this topic, because I think it's important. I think it's important to understand that if we feel these emotions and these feelings, it's okay. It's okay to have these kind of questions. It's okay to feel sometimes that we have these issues, and it's okay to talk about them. It doesn't take away from our emunah, doesn't take away from our faith, doesn't take away from our ability to say Atzur Tamim Palo and Tzidok Hadin. But at the same time, our emunah and Hashem should teach us how to sing. What am I going to do now? What am I going to make the world a little bit of a better place now? How can I fill that void of people that might not be here anymore to make the world a better place because they're not here? How can I step up and impact people around me because now there are people that can't? And that's what we do. We question, and at the same time, we daven ma'ariv. And we daven a stronger ma'ariv. And we daven a ma'ariv that has chesed components to it. We do whatever we can. And I think that that's an important thing for us to realize. You know, I know I may be speaking more raw and more emotionally than maybe just in a regular shiur, but these are things that are going on in my own life and in our own lives and in my own heart and my own emotions. And I think it's important to understand that we have a lot of questions and we validate them for our children. And we use that to say, okay, what am I going to do now? How am I going to create a better world? I know, Kayli, Lama Azavtani, what am I going to do now? How am I going to be taught how to sing? How am I not just going to cry, but ultimately be like Elie Wiesel, be like Anne Frank, to do something to make the world a better place? So I wish us all nechama in this current situation, hoping that we find refuos and yeshuas for all. Mirtzajam, next Tuesday night, we're going to talk about Sinas Chinam. Also, great topic, very positive. We'll make it positive.